Johnny got a toy golf set when he was three, and from that day on, he was hooked. All he wanted to do was golf, golf, golf. He'd be on the links before school, after school. All he ever wanted was to go pro. And then, one day, when he was holding his grandson and thinking about his 12 handicap, Johnny realized it just might not happen for him. But you know what did happen for him? He switched to Geico and saved a bunch of money on car insurance. So that was good, and so was hanging out with his grandson.
And now, a thought from Geico Motorcycle.
It took 15 minutes to take a spirit animal quiz online.
Please be the cheetah. Please be the cheetah.
And learn your animal isn't the cheetah, but the far less appealing blobfish.
Oh, come on.
To add insult to injury, you could have used those 15 blobfish minutes to switch your motorcycle insurance to Geico.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on motorcycle insurance.
28 Days is a different movie than 28 Days Later.
Yeah, that's true.
I think 28 Days is a rom-com.
With Sandra Bullock or something?
No, I'm pretty sure it's a horror film.
Well, every rom-com is a horror film in its own right.
Guys, what's going on? You are listening to The Prototype, only on ThisWeekInGeek.net. I'm one of your many hosts this week. I am Mike, the Birdman Dodd, but I'm joined with my many cohorts in insanity and stupidity as we decide to talk about video games in this month's edition of The Prototype. I am joined with...
Alex.
And Mr. Christopher.
That's right, guys. So we are here to do our monthly analysis of the video game industry to kind of give you a little bit of an insight into how our minds work and how we look upon the video game industry as a whole. In this episode, we're actually going to talk about a rather hot-button topic, which has been trending through Twitter, YouTube, etc., etc.
Technology Truths, brought to you by Geico.
Technology Truths.
Truth. Teenagers can communicate entirely in emojis.
How was the birthday party? Pizza slice, kitten, soccer ball, pineapple?
Truth. It's so easy to switch and save on car insurance at Geico.com.
What are you talking about? Paperclip, shoulder shrug, high five, wizard hat? What?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
And we're going to be talking about accessibility in games versus game design philosophy versus art. And we're going to come down... somewhere in the middle of all this, we all have our opinions on this. Believe me, we believe games are for everybody, but we'll get into that a little bit later in the show. Speaking of gaming, we typically talk about what we have been playing in our spare time here. Recently myself, and I'm going to give you, this was going to be a review on the show, but I'll give you my impressions of it right now. So I bought Power Rangers Battle for the Grid from Enway Software a couple weeks ago, and it was supposed to be awesome. It's Power Rangers, it's a fighting game, it's got Justin Wong, the guy who was like a Street Fighter legend for years. Holy fuck did you fuck this game up. Holy dog shit. Okay, you beat the arcade mode. I beat it with Magna Defender, Mr. Mike, Lost Galaxy. Awesome. I have the Magna Axe and all that bullshit. You know how long my arcade ending was? Less than 140 characters.
You got a tweet for an ending.
Yeah, a tweet. Like, fuck you! And it's so bad. And they're not even animated cutscenes. They're not even full screenshots of the enemy. They're like character portraits, which maybe fill a quarter of the screen, which basically, like, your character select portrait, and it just says, may the Magna Defender spirit live on or something. I was like, fuck you. And every arcade ending is about that short.
Sorry, Mario, your princess is in another castle.
Yeah, like, seriously. Now, they are giving us an update for free, giving us Trini and Dragonar from the Boom comics. We're getting Cenozoic Blue, which is from the 2017 Power Rangers movie. And we're getting somebody from Power Rangers Mystic Force as a free update. Plus the Season 1 Pass characters, which I bought the Season's Pass, like, you know, a dumbass. And there was a Collector's Edition, which gave you Lord Draken Evolution 2 and Pink Power Ranger. And I'm just like, my God, I expected so much more. Now, for a $20 game... there's expectations. There's a bar to be set. I was expecting the moon here because of Justin Wong and all the influences from the fighting game community. I expected something a little bit more for my 3-on-3 fighter. What I got was, in my opinion, a cash grab. There is little to no voice acting in this game, which if you told me the legacy Power Rangers came back to reprise their roles for at least a couple of hi-yahs or like those power or like those Street Fighter victory things like go home and be a family man from Guile or you must defeat the Fist of Shenlong from Ryu or whatever bullshit, I would have been fine with it. If you could have got fucking Johnny Young Bosch as the Black Power Ranger to come out and do it, I would have been fine with it. But no, they fucked that right up. And you're telling me Jason David Frank, Mr. I live on the Green Power Rangers payroll every week, couldn't have spared 15 minutes in a booth?
He basically does it for free.
Yeah, exactly. He loves the role. So why couldn't they get Jason David Frank to come out
and do
it?
I'm willing to bet that those pro gamers were given one of two things. Free publicity for themselves, or they were paid.
For sure. Like, guarantee ya. And just, motherfucker. And the amount of people defending this game online, like, first day this game came out, and you guys can agree, I'm a pretty good fighting game player.
Yeah.
I had infinite combos with Cat. I'm bouncing people in the corner until they're dead.
And this isn't like where you've been playing, let's say, like, Killer Instinct on the Super Nintendo. You've been playing it for like 3 years, and then you're so good at it, you can do that.
Yeah, I did this out of the box in 20 minutes.
Yeah, that's not good.
It's like, fuck you. You
need some sort of difficulty curve to enjoy a game like that. There's got to be something.
And they're ranked online matches. If you're a new player, you can be matched against high-level players right out of the gate. Fuck you, skill-based matchmaking.
That's fundamentally wrong with any sort of matchmaking system. You don't put the newbies against the veterans. That's how you get people to stop playing the game right away.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, we ran into problems with this with, like, Call of Duty Infinite Warfare and Advanced Warfare with skill-based matchmaking. And just, man, fuck you. However, one good thing I can say in terms of what I've been playing recently is the fucking motorcycle! I love recording during the summer.
I like how it answered you.
Asshole. Of the night. Anyway, continuing on. I'm calm. Alex convinced me, not very hard, I might add, to pick up an Atlus game.
Yep.
You got me to pick up Persona 5.
Yep.
And I'm playing through it right now. I'm playing in through it on easy mode because I just want to see the storyline before I go back and get my ass kicked a bunch. I'm really liking this game. The soundtrack is phenomenal. Plus, I just got my like talking cat.
It's an amalgamation. It's sort of the evolution of what the JRPG
was and now is.
Yeah, it's basically, it's taken the throne away from Final Fantasy because Final Fantasy has gotten so much into it, just how it looks versus how it plays. They did a decent job by making it more action-oriented in 15, but this is sort of like, if in 1997, when Final Fantasy VII came out, if you said, hey, in 20 years, what's a JRPG going to look like? You would have said, hey, it looks like it's a cartoon that came right off the screen, like an anime, and it's going to have fantastic music and elements of all my favorite types of games.
Yeah, like, it's really cool. One of the things I'm really looking forward to, and I don't know what this says about me, I'm looking forward to the dating aspects of this game. I'm really looking forward to picking up a girlfriend and working at an after-school job.
I'm judging you a little right now.
Well, here's the thing. It gets a bad rap. People are like, oh, is it a hentai game? No. It's relationship building. It includes the men. Like, even if you're, like, not romancing them, it's about building up friendships. And the bonds you create allow you to do more moves and also give you better endings.
Yeah, like, I'm looking for... There's this one character I've made, Satomo Ryuki or some bullshit. Some blonde-haired kid. And he used to be, like, a track star. But he's, like, known as a troublemaker. I'm going to turn his life around. I'm going to make him a track star again. He's going to be my broski. I'm going to make this happen in this game. Rounding out games I've played, The Division 2 I'm still enjoying. I'm thankful for the new updates, which are changing things, although having the daily and monthly or weekly challenges disabled is kind of a pain in the ass because people were exploiting it. But I'm still enjoying that game. It's still my favorite looter shooter right now. Because Destiny 2 is a dead game and fuck Anthem. And that's me, guys. Tristan, what have you been playing?
See, when you talk about Division 2, I like the gameplay, but I'm starting to get this feeling that every game wants me to log in once a day and finish my daily chores.
Yeah.
And I'm getting kind of frustrated with that. It's like I have a second job as a gamer, and that sounds more fun than it actually is, because I'm not getting paid to do it.
You can blame WoW for that.
Yeah, World of Warcraft and MMOs are probably where that originated from, really.
Like daily quests
and having your rest experience for doing whatever each day, and the first couple things you do are more rewarding than the next bunch of things you do each day. But a lot of games now, the live service model seems to have us logging in on a regular basis because that's the only way to really play the game efficiently.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to just binge a session, you're not going to get as much progress as if you logged in 1 hour every single day. And I don't want to play the same game every single day just to finish my chores. I want to play it because I'm having fun. So that's been frustrating me with The Division 2. It's a good game otherwise, but when I log in, I go, do I really want to do that today, or do I want to just kind of shoot some stuff? So I just shoot some stuff for a few minutes, and I'm going to go, okay, I think I'm done.
Yeah.
I think I'm done. And like you said, fuck Anthem. meanwhile, Sekiro is taking up most of my gaming time whenever I can. It is kicking the crap out of me, but I'm trying to immerse myself in the culture of the game, in the community of the game, so I find myself watching it on Twitch almost more than I'm playing it, which says a lot about Twitch. Twitch is good for that, because these Twitch streamers can actually beat the bosses, and I can't. It takes me several hours to beat a single boss, so it's been frustrating.
Just turn it off.
It is frustrating. I've had some friends talk about it on Facebook and say that they're not breaking controllers or rage quitting, but they've had to set the game down and walk away from it a few times during their playthrough just because it gets so frustrating. But it's not unfair and frustrating. From's doing what From Software does best, mm-hmm. making it very hard but fair. You can overcome it. It's not something where you feel like you've been cheated out of a death, or you've been, I had him, but if it wasn't for that glitch or that stupid mechanic, I would have been fine. Everything feels like if you died, you fucked up.
Yeah. So, if you die, it's on you.
Exactly. And From's been doing that since Demon's Souls. Demon's Souls was a bit of it was their first foray into it, so they hadn't quite perfected it. But once Dark Souls came out, and the subsequent Dark Souls 2, Dark Souls 3, and of course Bloodborne, they had it down to an art form. Where it's challenging, but it's respectful of the player. And that's why I love From Software's games so much. How about you, Alex? What have you been doing?
Other than recovering from being, like, with the perpetual, I guess, head cold flu, the weather has been sucky. So I had released a Tour to Treasure that had all the games that I've been playing for the last few weeks on it. But what I did when I was feeling the sickest was I had picked up the Yoshi's Crafted World. And in one weekend, I completely beat it. And by completely beat it, I mean I did every level, got every collectible I could. The only thing I haven't done is beat, like, the super secret hard boss at the end, because it's too difficult for me, even on easy mode, because I am not that kind of gamer. That being said, I super-duper enjoyed it. You know, there's no review coming for that. This is my review. It's good. Pick it up. Simply because I wanted to play it badly. I wanted a platformer game that I could breeze through when I just want to unwind. So I've been playing that. I also recently have been playing a lot of MLB The Show 2019, and will be starting Days Gone, which is going to be interesting because I am a fraidy cat. I am not good at horror games because I get too scared. So it's going to be a good experience for me to sort of try to come out of my shell and do the best I can to...
Yeah, because I think if you enjoy Days Gone, I really want you to play The Last of Us Remastered.
And that's what my brother's been telling me. He's like, dude, sometimes it goes on sale on the PlayStation Store for like $7. If it does, pick it up.
Yeah, like it's to the point where I'm willing to buy it for you because it's that good a story.
So, I mean, it's one of those... And I also have, just as of like yesterday or so, I got a review copy of Trails of Cold Steel, the remastered version, which is the RPG for the PS4. So I'll be sinking into that over the next few days as well. And as far as anything else goes, it's sort of been, you know, touch and go. I play a lot of games on my phone. And by games on my phone, I mean all those Candy Crush type things before I fall asleep. Other than that, like, I had a whole rush of games all at once, like 10 games that I was, you know, jumping around on in the last 3 or 4 weeks. But basically, I'm a guy who I will generally play one game at a time, generally single player stuff, and I'll go through like the 40 hours to beat it, and then I'll move on to the next game. But I've been juggling stuff a lot more than I used to, and I'm liking the idea of having an easy platformer to play, then going to a narrative-driven RPG, and then going to, you know, something like a racing game or a baseball game, something I can pick up and play for like 20 minutes at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically what I've been up to right now, is a lot of Yoshi, And then, you know, whatever I've been doing for reviews. And I've got a few things on the go right now.
All right. So let's kind of jump into today's topic of accessibility, game design, and art. As I mentioned off the top of the show, this has been a hot button topic on Twitter and Facebook and YouTube since Sekiro: Shadows Die Twice by Activision came out in From Software. And people are saying, well, is this game accessible? Like, are there enough, like, could someone who's visually impaired, someone who's physically impaired, or maybe has another disability be able to play this game? And because the From Software games are notoriously known for being brutally hard, difficult, but as we discussed earlier, you never feel like it's your, like, if you die, it's on you. But these games are meat grinders. They're meant, basically, there can be only one, as far as I'm concerned. They're meant to met out the weak.
And even then, Sekiro's a very interesting example of difficulty because it's an evolution of what From Software has been able to develop. With Dark Souls and Bloodborne, more so Dark Souls, you had a variety of builds that you were able to create to cater to your strengths and your weaknesses as a gamer. Mm-hmm. If you really want to in Dark Souls, you can kind of turtle up and hide behind your shield a bunch. If you're less dexterous and less able to react and parry and move with the flow of battle.
Yeah.
So it lets you dictate the way that you want to play. Bloodborne was kind of more reactive. You needed to be a little bit more aggressive. And you, if you're more of an attack, less of a defensive player, then you'll likely be successful in Bloodborne as opposed to the turtling up of Dark Souls.
Mm-hmm.
Sekiro as a whole is just a different experience. It's not about the diversity of builds. There's a little bit of customization as to how you play, but not to the same degree. You can't build a character like an RPG. There's no stats, there's no strength and dexterity and intelligence and stamina. None of that's there.
There's health just, bonuses and all that shit?
You can increase how much health you have after you beat a certain number of bosses. You get vitality beads. I can't remember the exact name off the top of my head right now, but after you collect 4 beads, you're able to increase your vitality overall, so you can take a little bit more punishment before dying. But that's less customization and more of a reward to let you progress into the end game a little bit easier. The customization comes from a skill tree which lets you use different attack combos, different abilities, but it's not an RPG style of building a character. Instead, the mechanics of the game are based almost entirely around parrying. There's not really blocking. You're sort of blocking, but it costs you stamina to block, and the only way to really successfully attack even the most basic enemy is to properly time a parry when they're attacking you and then counterattack when you can. So it's very timing based.
So it's a rock, paper, scissors sort of system?
Almost. It's not so much that, well, I have this ability so I beat you. It's more so you react attack quick when you have openings and block with proper timing. That's the best way to do the damage to the enemy.
So like actual sword combat.
It's like Kingdom Come Deliverance is like that.
In some ways. It's very fast-paced, though. This is the difference.
Okay.
And another aspect of Sekiro that makes it very unique is you are a shinobi, and shinobis are known to use whatever is available, whatever means they can to dispose of their target. So if you can sneak around and stab somebody in the back, it's highly encouraged. It makes it a lot easier to do. Mm-hmm. If you can make something fall on someone, then do that. Like, you use whatever's around in order to defeat your enemies. So there's rewards from creative thinking.
So is it like Ninja Gaiden meets Hitman?
I wouldn't put much Hitman in there.
You can improvise.
Yeah, the AI isn't really there to complement the stealth elements. It is, there are stealth elements to the game, but if an enemy comes across a dead body, they don't seem to care.
Oh.
So that's not the focus. The focus is mostly on just trying to dispatch enemies whatever way you can. Don't worry so much about hiding bodies or anything like that, because that's not part of it. But the difficulty comes from how fast the pace of the game is and how accurate your timing needs to be, especially in boss battles. Mm-hmm. Boss battles are ridiculously hard by comparison to a lot of previous From Software titles and titles in general. There's only so much you can do outside the normal scope of battle. You can occasionally backstab some bosses to get rid of one of their health meters. They have more than one.
Mm-hmm.
But some bosses, you can't do anything outside of the normal combos, the normal attacks and defending and timings, and they end up really, really difficult. because you need to learn the patterns of the boss. You need to learn the timings, where you can actually parry, when you have an opportunity to attack. And the bosses are punishing, so you're going to die a lot in the meantime. This is where the difficulty comes from. It's how fast-paced the game is and the inability for you to just sit back and kind of wait and learn. You have to just be in the battle right
from
the
get-go. You have to be in the moment, in the heartbeat.
You need to be on your A game all the time. So that's why this game is so punishing.
And I hear the argument for some people, the accessible argument, well, I want to play this game, and I can't because it is so difficult. And
Can I interject and say there's a difference between accessibility from a, is this widely accessible to the widest audience possible from a difficulty perspective, and is this accessible in that I am somebody who needs to have an adaptive play style. Like, I can't read the text, so we have to have a way to make the text bigger. Or, I can't rapidly press buttons, so I need to have an alternative way to control the game. Like, there's a big difference between, I think people are confusing that online when they're talking about accessibility. There's an accessibility from a purely, is this game accessible to actually physically play? Or is this game accessible from a, I am not good enough to play this game?
Yeah, and one of the arguments I've seen is, of course, the obnoxious get good scrub or whatever. But I think, at least in my opinion, art is created for... You generally assume art is created for everybody, but not everybody likes the same art. I like music, you guys don't. I like movies, you guys don't.
Yeah.
Video games kind of fall into the same...
Because you're kind
of
lame.
But it's stuff like that. And I had this discussion on Nerds of the Third Power a couple weeks ago with Billy, and or Dr. Gonzo, rather. And we were saying that video games, much like art, can be niche. I think From Software titles are niche. They're not meant for people like me and Alex. I don't want it to be so punishingly difficult that, fuck this, I'm not going to play it again. Like, when you said, I spent hours on a boss, instant turn off. You do not get my money at all with this title. But if I want to see the story of Sekiro, I can go to Twitch.
Yeah.
I can go to YouTube.
Because I like the visual style, but, like, for instance, there are a lot of people that complained about how short the game was for The Order when that came out on PS4.
Yeah, Order 1866.
I had an issue with the price point because it seemed like a lot of money for what you got. But for somebody who's more of a narrative player like me, it was a fantastic game. It had, you know, some gameplay issues that they ended up fixing with patches later. But there are people that be like, oh, that game's too easy. Well, it depends on what you're looking for in a game. If you're looking for a narrative experience, you want the ability to either make it easier for you to play. And a lot of newer games are doing that. Instead of calling it easy mode,
They'll say
narrative or story.
Yeah,
and they say this is we'll do this, and it doesn't affect, you know, the story. Like, used to be, you were punished. You want to play it on easy? You don't get to do the last boss,
or
you don't even get to see the proper ending,
or you don't get trophies.
Yeah, or you don't get trophies. Now it's okay. You get a different experience. You might unlock different things, like play it on hard. You unlock a special extra thing. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't affect the actual overall story.
Yeah.
Because it felt like before, you were being punished for not being, in quotes, good enough to play this game.
Mm-hmm.
And now a lot of games aren't doing that.
Yeah, there's a lot of games that don't let you see the ending because they're so hard if you're not good enough for it. It's
like
one of the
Halo,
only mediums.
Example.
It's one of the only media that you can't just see to the end no matter what. You don't...
Like, you can't
punished.
Be bad at watching a movie.
Exactly. You can't fail to watch a movie unless something really drastic happens. You have a heart attack in the middle of it, or the VCR, I'm dating myself here, DVD player breaks down. But gaming is unique in that it presents challenges to people to overcome as a medium. And it's difficult to say whether or not difficulty should be part of the experience. But I think it depends on what the developer wants to actually convey, whether or not the difficulty and mechanics of the game are part of the storytelling. Like in Sekiro, I think if you were to remove the difficulty, you'd probably be fairly bland.
You'd get a Ninja Gaiden clone.
Well, not only that, like I was hearing, if they had a story mode in that, the game would be like 2 hours long.
Yeah, the story, and From Software is pretty famous for doing this. The story is nuanced and rather hidden. You have to dig a lot to understand what it is and what's going on. There's a lot of room for interpretation, and if you were to just fly through the game without the difficulty that makes you spend more time in the world, then you're going to miss a lot of it. There's a fairly famous YouTuber. He's a WoW YouTuber. His name is Bellular, and he has he put out a video recently on the subject of accessibility versus difficulty. Mm-hmm. And his point was essentially the same. I'm paraphrasing it, but the developer has their point that they're trying to make, and mechanics are one aspect of the game. And if you're trying to tell a narrative story like Mass Effect or Dragon Age, then having a difficulty level where you just get to enjoy the story, you don't have to worry about the challenges, you don't have to worry about the story beating your ass, that's good for those games because they're narratively driven. But if you're making a game like Super Meat Boy, or you're making a game like Sekiro or Dark Souls, then the difficulty becomes part of the story you're trying to tell.
Yeah,
this world is brutal. This world is difficult. This world will kill you a lot because that's the world that you're living in. If you're breezing through it, it takes that heaviness out of the game. It takes part of the feeling of why this world is so brutal. Why is Dark Souls such a dark place to live?
It takes part of their narrative away.
Exactly. If you're just one-shotting everything and you're getting through everywhere, you don't get the same feeling of, wow, this world is brutal. This world is designed to kill me. Mm-hmm. That's part of the story they're trying to tell. So it's up to the developer to make the decision on what they want to focus on, narrative or mechanics, and how you want to intertwine those things, whether the difficulty is going to weave into that narrative.
Mm-hmm. There's also,
if it's not, then story mode is an excellent way to convey, hey, here's the story for people who don't want to worry about the shooting, who don't want to worry about being precision timing and precision aim and that sort of thing. They just want to enjoy a good story.
There's also, you have to tread a fine line of, there's a point where people feel entitled. I am entitled to play this game because, like, we're living in a world now where, yes, we allow, like, everybody's opinion counts, but there are people that will whine and say, I'm not good enough, make it easy so I can enjoy it just as much as everybody else. And we're in a world now, like you see online, where people will complain about every little thing. Everybody's outraged about everything. This game is too hard. This is too this. This is too that. We're not in a world where people are just happy with what they get. Everybody wants more for nothing.
And there's a lot of instant gratification.
That's what I'm trying to get at. They don't want to have to work for it. Well, that guy looks like he's having fun. It's too hard for me. I want to have as much fun as him, so make it for me. So I do get the idea of a developer that'd be like, no, this is our vision. This is what we want. If you don't like it, you don't have to buy it. But then you look at the publishers going, well, no, we want as much money as possible.
Yeah, and like that's part of like that's one of the part of the argument that really bothers me is I never want to compromise the developer's vision.
Yeah.
And if you're going to build an easy mode into it, is that compromising the vision? Like, I would never expect a Sekiro game or a From Software game to have an easy mode, because that's not what that developer has cultivated since Dark Souls 1 or Demon Souls, whatever the fuck it is.
But also look, it's a cultural thing. In Europe, like European games like The Witcher and that, they don't have difficulty settings. And if they do, they're still difficult on easy. Japanese culture is they make a game, they're like, this is a hard game. If you don't like it, you don't play it.
Yeah.
This is an easy game. You don't like it, you don't play it. It's a very North American thing to cater to everybody.
Which I get. I mean, I never want to deny someone an experience, but once again, it comes back to the art thing. Maybe this isn't for you.
And you know what? You know what you can do? You do what we did growing up in the 90s. If a part was too hard, you handed your controller to a friend to help you through that one hard part. If you really couldn't do it, you'd phone up your friend and go, man, I keep dying. I've been spending 2 hours of this. I know you're better.
Help me.
Can you come over and help me? And then your friend would come over and help you, and you give him a bag of chips or something.
You know what? I can actually give two examples of this that I've done personally. I was playing Tom Clancy's Rainbow Six Splinter Cell, the last one that was on the 360. And there was a part where I got stuck at. And I called my friend Jamie, the former host of the prototype, J.J. Johnson. And he was a really good gamer. I'm like, dude, I need your help. Can you help me? And he came over at 3 o'clock in the morning, because I knew he was awake. And he came over and helped me. Another time was I was playing Resident Evil 6. and I was playing it on medium or something, and I got stuck at one point in Leon's game. And he once again came over and helped me. And I don't think that's a bad thing. If you get stuck, it's okay to ask for help. It's not a... And this kind of will bring up a different point in this argument. We're going to talk about cheating as well, because there's a reviewer that Tristan brought up where he had to cheat to beat Sekiro's final boss. Is cheating okay?
I was always a game genie kid, but like just before we move on from the helping each other thing.
Yeah.
And like I had a PlayStation 1 right around, I'd say, 98 is when we probably got ours.
Mm-hmm.
So from like 98 to 2001 or 2, I was the kid that was the RPG kid. I got hooked after watching friends play Final Fantasy 7. And my friends, a lot of them liked RPGs, but they didn't have the patience to do generally the first 4 or 5 hours where it was all the story crap. And here, run around the town before you can leave the town. So what they would do is they would go, okay, I'll give you $5 or pay for a rental of a game when you could still rent games. If I give you my memory card and you play through the first 5 hours, I had no problem doing that. Especially that's how I would learn different games. Because I had friends that loved RPGs, but they didn't like the slow pacing at the beginning. But back when you couldn't skip cutscenes or anything.
Yeah.
Because like a lot of the first 5 hours was always explained in the manual. Or you learned about it from like the trailer or the magazine or whatever. Yeah. So I was the kid that would do that. I'd help them out that way. And that's when I would call them and I'd be like, hey, I'm having real trouble with, you know, X game, the action game that I really wanted to see, but I couldn't get past this one part. And those kids would come over. We would, you know, you trade service. It was a way to be social. And now it's like the online community. It's like, oh, you're not good enough? Ha, scrub.
Yeah, it sucks. Yeah, it sucks to be you.
Yeah, it sucks to suck and get good, kid.
It's like, you know what?
Learn to play.
We can all enjoy it. And that, I think the true social aspect of being in person is lost now.
Oh, yeah. Like, for example, I'm an arcade kid, and there was always the culture of, I got next. You put your quarter on the machine, and you play the next player. If you lost, you go back in the line.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's something to be said for the social experience of difficult games and couch co-op and whatnot, but... Where was I going with this?
You were saying we were
mentioning cheating.
Yeah, yeah. Like
cheating.
I was a game genie kid.
Whatever makes the single player experience fun for you, you do you.
Yeah,
cheating in a multiplayer game, you're a piece of shit. Don't fucking do it.
Yeah, but like beating Mario 3. After you beat Mario 3, you can only beat it so many times before you want to try something different. So you put it in a game. You go, let's put in moon
Infinite
jumps
lives or
moon, yeah, you would do fun stuff like that or codes like here's a weird level that's all garbled up.
Or here's invincibility.
I'm a little kid. I'm having trouble with Zelda because I'm 5 years old. My parents aren't good enough to play it. And I didn't have friends that had the game. So my dad's like, all right, well, here's the Game Genie. You know what? Here's Infinite Hearts. And I would just go and explore and play.
I still remember a Game Genie code for Legend of Zelda Link to the Past. C222D4DD. I can't remember what it did. But wow. It just stuck in my head forever.
But yeah. And the thing is, the game, you didn't harm anybody else's gameplay, and it didn't mean you wouldn't play through it regularly anyway.
Eventually, yeah.
But you know what? Sometimes when they didn't have easy modes in games, you made your own easy mode.
Yeah, that's why Game Genie and then Game Shark for 64 and other systems was so popular, because it let people access parts of games that otherwise they couldn't.
Yeah, and now there's even a way, which this is fairly new. I've never seen this, or at least I don't see this often, but Resident Evil 2, the remake that came out back in January, just released a piece of DLC. You want to unlock all the stuff where you have to be really good to get, like the infinite ammo weapons, the costumes? Yeah, you can unlock it for $6.
Yeah.
And I remember a time when a lot of games would put cheat codes directly into the game.
It was just
the
part
Konami
of the game.
Code, first of all.
Yeah,
a lot of N64 titles did.
Yeah, 64 titles did those. StarCraft and Warcraft were pretty famous for it.
Mortal Kombat.
Yep.
Yeah. For example, The Sims did it as well, where you type in
infinite money or whatever.
Yes, type in some words and a certain phrase into the chat box, and all of a sudden
Blizzard
you unlock
games,
a certain
like Diablo
thing.
And all that.
Yeah, maybe not Diablo because it's all multiplayer, but
well, no, the original Diablo.
Well, the original Diablo had a lot of very easy ways to modify the game files.
There's no cow level, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, there is traitors. No cow level and such for StarCraft teams based off
right,
of Diablo.
Sorry, yeah, that's right.
So it was making fun of Diablo, but yeah, they were integrated into other Blizzard.
RTSs were notorious for having cheats.
Exactly. RTSs are very well known for being very challenging.
Yeah.
So in order to let more people enjoy them, it would usually disable achievements if an achievement was even part of the game, or it would disable certain things that you couldn't progress
in certain
ways.
But you could spend hours just having fun.
Exactly. It lets you goof around with the systems that are in the game. That's something I think
GTA.
Is important. Yeah, GTA. A lot of the GTA games had those. Remember the different combos with L1, R1, and triangle, whatever else. Super
or
long.
Or using the cell phone to put in your...
Yeah. I remember back when I was in high school playing Vice City, and we discovered this one road, this one long stretch of road where there was a ramp at the end. It was a staircase, so we turned it into a ramp, and we would take turns spawning different vehicles, fire trucks and tanks and such, to see how far we could launch ourselves off this ramp and over a building. That's how we ended up having fun in that game for hours. We would come home from school and we would play that for 2 hours, just launching off of the same ramp over and over again, because we were able to use these cheat codes and modify the game to play it the way we wanted to play it.
I've never beat a Grand Theft Auto because all I ever did was put cheat codes in and murder people.
You can beat a Grand Theft Auto game?
Grand Theft Auto 5 and Vice City are the two best stories.
Do you know that I did not know until San Andreas came out that there was a story? I thought that they were just ad hoc random missions. I had no idea that there's a narrative to those games, because I would just spend 5 hours blowing people up.
Yeah,
and that's most of the fun.
The first Grand Theft Auto, I remember that was all cheat codes. That's all I did with it. I never beat the first one, but I beat I beat Vice City, which is basically Scarface, which is fine. San Andreas I never beat because I didn't get the gang lifestyle, but I've seen the game played through. Again, cheat codes. I'm just going to spawn a tank and run through downtown San Andreas with the tank. 4 was Nico and his fucking cousin.
4 was 4.
It wasn't cousin, a bad game. But... and then 5 was amazing. 5 is the only Grand Theft Auto game I've beaten with no cheats whatsoever at all during the experience.
So yeah, like that's, you know, accessibility. Put those options in there if you really want them. Like, there are people that would beat Sekiro, and then after they beat it, be like, you know, I'm going to put in some codes and just fuck around for a bit.
Yeah, and there's no problem with that. Like, one of the things I like doing is with Resident Evil 2, once I ran through it, I hacked my game. I wanted the infinite ammo weapons because I wanted to explore and look around in the environment without having to worry about having my head ripped off.
Yeah.
Every few minutes.
So that brings us to the other accessibility factor, which is making games accessible for people that might not be able to play physically the same way.
Yeah.
So, like, the issue that you've had a lot of times with reviews are...
Text.
You can't make the text big enough for somebody who may be limited in mobility for, like, a wheelchair, or, you know, maybe you can't view at a certain angle, or you have eyesight issues. You know, a lot of times when you double or triple the text size in these games now, it only brings it to the level that 5-10 years ago used to be the normal size.
Yeah.
Because they're almost expecting that you play it on a 4K TV like 5 feet away.
Yeah.
Or like, they're designing the game in front of these monitors at their desks, and they're like 2 feet away from it. Well, that looks fine. You should be able to increase the text size so that it's so big that it basically covers the screen.
Yeah, you should be able to read it no matter what.
Yeah, or it's almost intrusive on your actual ability to play. Almost.
Yeah.
But then again, we compromise the vision of the developer, I guess, if you really want to make that argument.
But you're not, though. You're really not. As long if it's the ability to read is important to the game, you should be able to read.
Yeah, because for example, I hated God of War PS4 because I couldn't read the fucking text, and some of those names pass by so quickly. I want to be able to read it, so I'm like, okay, that's the wife of so and so, or that's the lord of whatever.
Well, you've encountered it in the Division as well. We're even increasing the size. Tripling the text size and putting high contrast on, you still can't read all the text that's on the screen.
Yeah, like I can't see how much damage I'm doing, like the little numbers that pop up.
I'm on a. I was using a 50-inch 4K TV 3 feet away, and I'm having trouble reading it myself.
I'm well known around my friends for having the best vision out of pretty much everybody. I have incredible eyesight. I can read text from very long distance, even if it's tiny. I use a 32-inch screen to game on for PlayStation 4 and Xbox, so it's not exactly the biggest screen in the world, but it's big enough for gaming. I don't sit too far away. But Horizon Zero Dawn was the moment that I noticed that text has become too small. I physically cannot read the text in Horizon Zero Dawn whenever you're reading item descriptions or something's happening on screen. I just can't see it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's becoming more and more common for text to be smaller and smaller. Like, they're designing it to be played on PC where it's a 24-inch screen, but you're only 2 feet away.
Well, I think they're designing it for 4K screen and that you're playing on... Like, they're designing it. You see, like, when they do the PlayStation or Xbox, like, inside the developer studio, they're designing it on, like, 40-inch monitors that they're sitting 2 feet away from. And they're like, oh, we'll just double the text size.
That doesn't help me.
It's so small.
It doesn't help, especially when there's not enough high contrast. Like, you know what would help? If you turned on high contrast, you know, vision impaired, if the text came up at the bottom of the screen, but it was literally the very bottom of the screen, like, if everything, not scrunched up, but let's say they changed the aspect slightly, and there was a black bar across the bottom that the text was written into.
Yeah.
So that it was away from the background. Because there are people that could have colorblind issues, and they usually have colorblind options, but sometimes it's hard to differentiate from all the little details in the background, especially in, like, The Division, where you're walking around, there's garbage all over the ground, and you're walking by, you're like, was that text that I saw pop up, or is that just a piece of garbage? So you have that. Again, you have games like Bayonetta and other titles. Usually Platinum's pretty good at doing this, where if it's a game where you have to press a whole bunch of buttons really quickly, some people don't have the dexterity to do that. So they have an option to put on accessible mode, which will be like hold the button down longer.
Spider-Man did that.
Yeah.
So that's one.
Sony has been pretty good since Horizon Zero Dawn as a first-party title.
With the exception of God of War.
Yeah, with the exception of God of War, where they're starting, I notice in their titles, even in like MLB, there's options for all this. To make, like, you can turn, like, oh, there's a whole bunch of buttons you can press for different type of pitches and all. You can turn it to a mode where it's like, I can't press the button and move this quickly and do these things.
Mm-hmm.
Where you can turn it to, you press one button once, and then you just aim where you're going to throw. So they do options for accessibility, even in sports titles now.
Yeah, I mean, on a point my friend brought up, Gonzo from Nerd to the Third Power, was talking about, I don't remember all these arguments about accessibility 10 years ago with the Switch, or not the Switch, with the Wii U. And the Wii.
That was multiple factors. Because it was a 480i/480p, all the text was bigger anyway, so when you blew it up onto a large screen.
But I also think motion controls. Like, I like how you can disable motion controls in games now for accessibility.
Well, yeah, because remember Lair?
Yeah.
But I mean, the thing with Nintendo, and Nintendo's text has always been big, even in like Yoshi, it's big. They designed their games so that small children could read it. So there's never, like, the fonts are bold, large, and they come up slowly. So that's like, their titles are like that. If you try playing, like, Mass Effect on the Wii U, you're going to have problems reading the text.
Yeah, it's just, I did, and I played that on there.
Whereas, you know, it's just an issue that, from a game philosophy standpoint, it's like they don't want you to have text on, even if you should. Like, well, if you go back 20 years, let's say in the 90s, generally, they're like, oh, you're crippled and can't do anything? Well, fuck you. We don't need your money. And then they realized, there's a lot of people that we could get money from that just can't play games currently.
Yeah, because we have a friend of the show. I'm not going to name him just in case he doesn't want that. But he plays Grand Theft Auto one-handed.
There are a lot of people that have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Thankfully, there is a lot of technology that's being developed now, like Xbox's adaptive controller that allows people with any sort of physical need to still play these games with full functionality.
Well, and there's even custom ones. I've seen people where there's adaptive companies that make it for people that are like quadriplegic, where they can use their mouth moving switches and stuff that will do the same thing. There are certain games you won't be able to play, something that's very Twitch gamey. But if you want to play a strategy game, or you want to play an RPG, or you want to play like Yoshi or something without a timer that you can take, you know, play at your own pace.
Yeah.
There are things for people that need mouth controls. Or people that don't have arms and use their feet to control things.
Yeah, like, there are people... I know there's one Call of Duty player who is completely blind, and he will mop the floor with you. Because accessibility built in the Call of Duty, he hunts on sound cues.
And that's all about game design and sound design. Because if you have, you know, let's say a good Dolby Atmos headset enabled, where even though it's stereo, it can do proper spatial sound. You could hear things from anywhere.
Yeah.
And know exactly how far away they are, what angle they're coming at from. You could hear your people talking to you around you, and you could be, you know, the blind assassin.
There's also players, like, I know there's a number of fighting game community players where they're blind or they have some other kind of disability, and they're really friggin' good.
Now, if you're blind and deaf, you're probably not playing games.
Yeah, there's probably...
There's got to be a limit at some point. It's...
There's a point where it's like, well, I can't make it accessible to all of that.
Yeah, it's an audiovisual medium, and there's limitations to what can be done, but it's nice to see how much we're pushing forward and making the accessibility there for anyone that wants to play the games. More and more games are becoming accessible to these people.
Basically, except in extreme cases, physical disability should not be a barrier to play.
Yeah.
So that in that realm of accessibility, you know, everything should be open. Like, then again, the only argument would be like, well, Sekiro requires this amount of dexterity to play. Then, you know what? Maybe there should be a notice on the box. This game requires highly attuned, you know, dexterity.
Or something, yeah.
Not that there's a warning. I'm not saying you can't play this, but it should be in the thing saying it requires Twitch capability.
Yeah, a high degree of dexterity or hand-eye coordination, that sort of thing. Something.
And I haven't done any research, but there may be websites dedicated to disabled gamers or you know, to...
There are organizations like, I think it's ablegamers.com.
Where they'll list like which that. Games, like, you know how there's, what was it, the stupid, oh, I'm going to say stupid, but what's the stupid Dove organization that does the family movies for Christian things? And they rate a movie based on how much violence is in it and stuff. It's like, this is not acceptable because there's sex and it's against whatever. But there are organizations that do that where they'll rate something and go, here's a list of everything that might be an issue. Well, they could do that for, disabled gamers. It's like, this game requires, you know, hand-eye coordination of a certain level. And have a list of all these things so that somebody could go, is this game going to be for me or not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the organization is ablegamers.org. We give people with disabilities custom gaming setups, including modified controllers and special assistive technology like devices, let you play with your eyes so they can have fun with their friends and family. We're using the power of video games to bring people together, improving the quality of life with recreation and rehabilitation. I've met these people at PAX East. Really good.
Oh, no, that's really awesome. But I mean, you know, just a website that's like, okay, let's say the new God of War is coming out. It'll list, like, not like the content of violence, but it'll list, you need to...
Level of accessibility.
Level of accessibility. Does it have vision stuff? Does it have this? So you can know before you buy a game and find out, hey, I won't be able to play this. And most stores don't take returns.
One of the companies that I think is really doing good work with accessibility options is Ubisoft.
They've
taken the lead, in my opinion.
And like we sounded like we were ragging on Division 2. And it's not. It actually has a lot of accessibility options. That game has an issue with being too dark.
Yes.
Is it too dark to see some things?
Mm-hmm.
Also, there's so many little details on the screen. I think it wasn't that the accessibility
it's world
was
design.
The accessibility wasn't an afterthought. It's just there's things they could do to tweak and improve it for the next game. But pretty much every title in the last, 4 years from them or so have had pretty extensive accessibility options. Hell, even when I got the Just Dance game to review,
mm-hmm.
there were so many options. Like, they had an option for me, like, when I was like, okay, I've got some mobility issues with my leg. It had an option that says, will you be playing sitting down?
Yep.
Like, are you in a wheelchair or do you have mobility issues? They didn't even have that option. You select yes, and it goes, okay, adjusting so that you just have to use your arms. And you could still do just as well. It just ramps up the arm activity. So, like, I never thought that a dancing game would have that kind of accessibility out of the box. It wasn't a DLC download. It was right out of the box. We're ready to go. You're in a chair. Are you playing with grandma or somebody? Somebody who might not have the mobility? You can play this. Oh, you have issues using a controller? Okay, can you hold a cell phone in your hand? We'll use the gyro in your cell phone to determine how fast you're moving. So that's cool. And then again, it's Ubi's been pretty good about that. Now, I wonder how much of that is due to Ubisoft... most of their games being developed either in
Canada or
France, where in France they're beholden to the European Union, where they have pretty strict standards for things, or the fact that there's Ubisoft. I'm not sure about Quebec how they have it, but in Ontario, everything that's produced has to be accessible.
Yeah.
So that's why, you know, like Starlink had a ton of options for this. So anything produced in Toronto for any studio, like even though let's say a studio that's an American company or something might have a studio in Toronto. If it's produced there, it has to have accessibility stuff, even if it's not meant for this market initially. Mm-hmm. It's just the law. So I'm wondering if that plays a factor because most of Ubisoft stuff is done in Europe or here. Whereas a lot of Sony's pretty good though, but a lot of Sony stuff is done in San Diego or
Santa Monica.
And then you've got like the Japanese stuff, you know, they don't have a requirement for that. In fact, a lot of buildings in Japan really aren't that accessible. It's just not part of their culture.
Mm.
It's moving that way. I've actually watched a lot of videos on it because I was thinking I want to take a trip maybe to Japan. And like a lot of the videos are saying, like a lot of their buildings still aren't wheelchair accessible. Not that I need one, but a lot of their stuff isn't because it's not required by law to be. The streets all are now. They're developing a lot of that sort of stuff, especially for tourism. But culturally, they're not. Whereas Europe and the European Union, they're all about being accessible to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, a lot of this, I think, boils down to cultural differences for a lot of things. Like, how many Japanese games have an easy mode that aren't Nintendo?
I can't think of any, truth be told.
Really don't have an answer for that.
No.
Like, really, any of the games that they're producing that are, you know...
Maybe some of the Metal Gear games have an easier setting, but...
The only one that I can think of is a Square Enix title will.
Yeah.
And that's because they are so internationally and global. Like, you could not release Kingdom Hearts without having some mode that children can play. Because that would be Disney dictating them, like, you gotta have a mode the kids can play, or we're gonna be pissed. And Final Fantasy, it has to appeal to the broadest audience, because they sell a lot more copies in the West than they do there. But for most other titles, especially titles like Sekiro or...
Does Dragon Quest have an easy mode?
Dragon Quest is by... Yes. But it's also by default not as difficult as you think.
Okay.
The Persona series, traditionally, like...
It's very difficult.
The Shin Megami Tensei was very difficult until Persona 3 and 4... where they started to sell a little bit to the West, and they're like, well, we're going to put an easy mode in. Actually, in Persona, I think, or not Persona, I think it was Shin Megami Tensei 4 on the 3DS, on the Western release.
Don't you mean the Vita? Golden?
No, Shin Megami Tensei 4 was a 3DS title.
Oh, okay.
The main flagship title.
Right.
If you lost in battle, I think it was 4 or 5 times in a row and kept dying, it then popped up saying, would you like to enable easy mode? Which they didn't have over there.
Yeah.
So they are doing that to think of the Western people in mind, because in Japan, certain titles are just known, it's difficult, if you don't like it, too bad. That's how they are. They're still very entrenched in the 80s and early 90s mentality that we had. But they're getting to there, so like, okay, well, it's not going to be enabled by default, but if you really are struggling, we'll let you do it.
Kind of like how in Donkey Kong, if you die so many times, you get like infinite lives to try a level.
For that level, yeah. They'll be like, or would you like to skip this level?
Yeah.
So yeah, they are.
I think
doing
Mario games do that too now, where after so many tries on levels, like, would you like Luigi to show you how to do this?
Nintendo first party titles are probably the most accessible titles, I would say,
probably
in the world.
Yeah,
as far as options go, they may not even have an option to increase the text size, but most of the time they don't need to because the text is so large.
Yeah, and a lot of Nintendo titles don't necessarily have that much text. The first party stuff, anyway. Like,
yeah, even
something like Paper Mario. Yes, it's text heavy because it's an RPG, but New Super Mario Brothers. Barely anything at all, because that's not the focus of the game.
Or Xenoblade had the option, like, you could enable text and you could double the size and everything, and it was always big enough no matter what screen you were looking at. So they are very cognizant of that. Like that, and it's kind of rare for a Japanese company to do that, because but they are. They've always been the family in mind, and they're like, family comes in all different shapes and sizes. So I get kind of mad when people are saying, you know, accessibility, and they just assume that means easy mode.
Yeah.
Accessibility is all encompassing. Like, how easy is it for the everyday person and anybody to access?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's the key difference in accessibility. There's the two different types of accessibility. There's physical accessibility to people with any sort of alternative needs. If you're missing an arm, if you have visual impairment, that's physical accessibility. And then there's the gameplay accessibility. How easy is it to play through? How can people of different skill levels actually play through and enjoy the game? So there's the two different types of accessibility that tend to overlap kind of in the middle a little bit. And it's difficult to say where you need to draw the line as a developer to make sure that the game isn't discriminatory, but is also still part of your original vision as a game. Well,
could Steel Battalion even be made today?
With that all those switches? Probably controller. Not.
But again, it depends on the budget and it depends on the market. If they're like, this is a simulator as if you were going to be in a real mech, then you would know by marketing it, by showing this is how complicated it is, somebody would know, is this game for me or not?
Yeah.
I do think it needs to be in the marketing. I do. There needs to be something that you can look up and say, hey, this is a hardcore game. This is a game, they say, a game of skill. This is you need to be highly skilled to complete this game.
But then again, by putting that connotation on it, you're kind of taking away from your market base.
And those people that buy it that end up hating it, try to return it, they'll get their money back or, you know, complaining at a game store or
something. There should be a rating, like we discussed earlier, where they say, requires this degree of physical or whatever. It's kind of like how the ESRB has a rating. Maybe an accessibility rating
or yeah, like literally have like an access on the website, even if they don't print it on the box.
Yeah,
have it say accessibility options. It says like physical dexterity requires fast button presses and sequence. This game has requires a certain level of reading. You need to be able you need to be able to read at a fifth grade level.
Yeah,
you know, something because the text might move fast,
mm-hmm.
or it'll say something like. Colorblind mode and there's a colorblind mode. Mm-hmm. There's a mode that has speech to or text to speech,
mm-hmm.
or there should be something that has a list of these are all the features that are available and this is what's required of you.
Yes,
because
I agree.
Because you don't want people buying a game and then they can't play. Like you had Sudden Strike 4 to review and you couldn't play it at all.
No, because it was so small and considering where I was sitting, I was like, I want to play this, but I can't.
And, I mean, can you imagine if you had, like, you had it for review, but what if you had gone out and paid $80 and couldn't get your money back?
Yeah, I would have felt completely ripped off.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a good idea, but we need to make sure that it's properly regulated and has a major regulatory body like the ESRB to look after that to make sure that everything is in complete standards and is worded in ways that are professional and non-offensive to a lot of people. Because it's treading on delicate ground to talk about any sort of physical impairment, any sort of neurodiversity or physical issues. You need to make sure that it's properly put down on paper.
No. Because no, you've fallen to the category of, oh my god, what if it, you know, am I going to offend somebody, right?
Yeah.
Is this going to be offensive? And you would not want that at all. Like you wouldn't want something that you know says this game is okay for somebody slow. You wouldn't want something like that. You want to say like again, it's
neurodiversity.
It's like this requires a certain grade level of reading.
Yeah, I like the idea of putting it on the website and then on the boxes it could be for accessibility options.
Visit this website.
Because there's a lot of different options that are out there. It'd be too much to list on a box.
Because you have your ESRB stuff, and then beside that you could just have for this
game has been rated by the accessibility board.
Simple rating for details.
You can have it rated, you know, A, B, C, or D, or something like A means it's accessible to all these categories. But you can even have it like ESRB could alter what they're saying. Like, you know, sometimes they'll say all the little kids' games requires reading. Nintendo does that actually, but you could have it say beginner level reading or intermediate level comprehension or whatever, or advanced level, something that's a very difficult strategy game.
Yeah,
you might not. A kid might think it looks cool, but then find out, you know, he's like, "Wow, I'm not at this level yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't understand what I'm reading. Yeah. So why do I bother?"
So and that's not offensive at all if you put it in a format of a beginner level, intermediate level, or advanced level reading, and that should not push somebody off from buying it. If they're afraid that that's going to be like we're going to sell less, then you know what, you weren't going to make that
you
sale anyway
because
diligence. Somebody would buy it and then return it. You wouldn't get your money anyway.
Yep.
So,
yep.
You know, you can't be somebody who's like, oh, I'm going to buy a visual novel text adventure and then be like, I bought it for my 6-year-old.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they're not going to, it's a cool box and I like that anime. Well, an anime you watch. An anime you don't read.
Yeah, this is a visual novel where you participate in. So,
I want to summarize my thoughts on accessibility versus difficulty versus art by saying that difficulty has its place in the gaming sphere, and it's important that we respect the developer's vision of what the game is supposed to be. As long as we're willing to make the games physically accessible, skill level is different than physical ability. If something is too hard for you to play, then if that's what the developer designed the game around, then maybe the game's just not for you. It's not exactly the niche that you're wanting to be involving yourself with. If you physically can't play a game because it's too hard, not because there's some sort of physical roadblock, then it's not necessarily a game that's designed with you in mind. It's designed for players that are 100% about the difficulty, 100% about the challenge and the timings and the precision gameplay. So every game has its niche, every game has its core audience that it's designed for, and like many other art forms, music, movies, and actual physical art, not every piece that's designed and created is meant for absolutely everybody.
Exactly. My thoughts on this, I think it would be nice to have an internationally regulated standard for accessibility like the ESRB and give standards that, like, here's A, B, C, D, here it is in plain language. If you want more details, go to this website. I'd like to see Able Gamers get more involved with accessibility as much as they possibly can. I think they do some fantastic work. Like I said, I've met them at PAX East a few times and I really like them. But I never want to compromise a developer, but I never want to exclude people at the same time. But again, sometimes different tastes, different art is art. So, final thoughts.
Yeah, I do think that it should be something that is advertised. You know, if you walk into a game store, you know, and you look at the back of the box, it says, you know, this has been rated by the accessibility standard of A, B, C, or D, or whatever. There should be a pamphlet or something on the wall of the store. Yeah. Or, you know, even let's say you go to a Walmart, in the, you know, on the display case, there should be a sticker that has that. And it's like, here's what it means. A means it's past everything, and pretty much anybody can play it. B means this. C means that, you know, accessible to some. You know, and not, don't go down to F because everybody assumes F means fail.
Yeah.
Or, it can, or instead of that, you go level 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah.
Level 1 means that, you know, the bare minimum is required. You know, this is a difficult game. Somebody who, you know, might not have the dexterity can play it, whatever. Mm-hmm. And level 4 or whatever means that it goes above and beyond and is accessible to absolutely everybody.
Yeah.
You know, you have that. You do it in levels or something. And then just have that out there. And then for the first, let's say, year where the games are coming out with that, every single game should have a little insert in the where the manual spot would be in the box. Or when you buy it digitally, when it starts up, you know, they have the warnings.
Yeah,
the
big splash screen.
Yeah, saying, this put a splash screen up.
Yeah. And or for instance, you could, every game should have a demo in this day and age, and the demo could pop up saying this is this. Or when you watch a trailer when a game is announced, say
here's
this
the accessibility option.
Or yeah, there's an accessibility at the very end. A splash. This game has been, you know, this game is still in development. Here is the determined accessibility rating.
Yeah. So.
And it's not hard, and it's not patronizing. It's just.
It's not obtrusive.
No.
Yeah, it's designed to increase the audience that can participate in the games.
Ultimately,
designed
to
maximize
to
the value of your purchases, to make sure that you are going into purchasing a game knowing what you're getting into.
So ultimately, we want everybody to have fun. We want everybody to be with us along these wonderful journeys in the digital realm. And hopefully we all can. So we'll see. Wait and see what happens. I know we said we were going to do fighting games on this edition of the prototype, but next time we will talk fighting games because we'll have Mortal Kombat to talk about, which comes out in just a few weeks here in April. So I'm sure we'll do something on the Mortal Kombat franchise. I'm a huge fan. I still remember most of my finishers from Mortal Kombat 2. And it'll be a good time. So until next time, we have been
Mr. Christopher,
Alex.
I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd saying live free or die hard. We'll catch you guys again next time, right here on ThisWeekInGeek.net.
And now, an ad from Dad.
All right, save money on car insurance when you bundle home and auto with Progressive.
Can I take these off?
All right.
What is this? This looks good.
Wow.
That's well made.
Where did you get this? I'm talking to you with the hair. Yeah, where did you get this? It's good stuff.
That's solid. That's not veneer. That's solid stuff.
Progressive can't save you from becoming your parents, but we can save you money when you bundle home and auto. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates and other insurers. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
Your home is important. That's why GEICO helps make it easy to save on condo insurance. Because home is more than just a place. Home is where you took minimalism too far because there's only one chair in your entire condo and your only entertainment is one card. Not even a deck of cards, but a single card. And all your guests have to share one plate and one fork, but you're convinced that less stuff means more freedom. The GEICO Insurance Agency could help protect the overly minimalist broom closet you call home. Call GEICO and see how easy it is to switch and save on condo insurance.